My next guest found himself questioning his place in the world and the city after the Occupy Wall Street protesters were kicked out of Zuccotti Park. As an African-American freelance writer, he's firmly part of the 99%, but his recent move to Hamilton Heights made him wonder if he was part of a process of displacement, of gentrification. Dax Devlon Ross writes about his struggle with that in a new web magazine, Dominion of New York, which bills itself as an international magazine for black people who love powerful ideas. And he joins me now. Welcome to WNYC.
Oh, thank you so much for having me today.
First, for people who don't know Hamilton Heights, tell us about the neighborhood. Its boundaries are actually changing in the kind of central northern part of Harlem, right?
Right, right. Well, you know, I think it's best known for its a particular community within it called Sugar Hill, and Sugar Hill is home to a number of famous African Americans. We could talk about Duke Ellington, we could talk about Du Bois, we could talk about Langston Hughes, a number of other folks. At the same time, it has gone through some of the traditional transformations that you've seen that we've seen in urban cities all over America. So in the 60s and 70s, it went through a lot of the blight that is reflective of a lot of what happened in America following the kind of suburbanization of the United States. But now it's sort of making its comeback, but it's making a comeback, I believe, at least in a bit of a different way.
So it's roughly 135th Street to 155th Street.
Yes.
Between Edgecombe Avenue and Riverside Drive.
Mm-hmm.
And looking at population trends recently, the black and Latino population is down in parts of Hamilton Heights by about 15%.
Mm-hmm.
The white population up a similar amount.
Mm-hmm.
It's got some of the greatest income disparity in the city, according to the census numbers that came out last year. So when did you move there, and was gentrification on your mind at that time?
You know, I think that was the whole point. Like, I moved there roughly 2.5 months ago. And when I moved there, it never crossed my mind. And as you pointed out, I think the Occupy movement, I had been writing about it a lot anyway, but I think the Occupy movement became an opportunity and a sort of flashpoint for me, where I started to reflect on my own privilege within this society, but specifically within the neighborhood that I was moving into. So once I saw this vast income disparity that was happening in this particular community and realized that I was sort of on the higher end, it made me start to think about my place. As we talk about the 99%ers and the 1%ers in the world, you know, what does it mean to be in the top 10% of a particular community that you're moving into? And I think that was what sort of struck a chord for me.
And you even took a survey of some friends as to whether you could be a gentrifier. And they all said no for different reasons. Some having to do with race, some having to do with economics.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing about it. You know, I think specifically, historically speaking, with African Americans, we typically don't think of ourselves as gentrifiers. There's a face, there's an idea, there's a way it looks, and we don't see ourselves as part of that. And I think for me, a lot of it had to do with my own experience growing up in Washington, D.C., and watching it happen in Washington, D.C., then watching it happen in Brooklyn, and never really seeing myself as a fixture or even as the person who was doing the displacing. But now in my mid-30s, you start to have to think about what does it mean when people when you live in a building where most of the folks who live in the building are living in living at a rent stabilized or rent subsidized rate, and you're not?
And you reluctantly embrace the label gentrifier. Is it ultimately a matter of money simply, or more about education, expectations?
Oh man, see, I think it's such a complex question, because it can't just be about class. Because I think that, you know, and this is something that one of the people that I interviewed and talked to me about, he said, well, listen, can you be a first-line gentrifier? Meaning, is the neighborhood going to fundamentally change if you as a black middle-class person moves there? Is there going to be different policing that takes place? Are there going to be more folks who move there of the same income in the same income bracket? Are you going to see home prices and home values increase? Maybe not. And I think that's part of the challenge for people to recognize, is that does being black and middle class mean that you're going to fundamentally change the neighborhood on your own?
And listeners, I wonder if anybody else is struggling with this kind of thing in your own life. We have about 10 minutes for your calls if you want to call in. And if you think you could be described as, let's say, a black or Latino gentrifier, 212-433-WNYC. Do you reject that label or reluctantly embrace it, like our guest? 212-433-WNYC, 433-4255. 9692. Call in and commiserate if you're, you know, somebody who's doing okay and moving to a neighborhood with a lot of people of color, a lot of poor people, and thinking various ways about that whole relationship. Why the fear of being part of gentrification? I mean, you liken it to the American support for the underdog, but is a poor neighborhood seen as more authentic? Is there anything inherently wrong with moving to a neighborhood where, you know, where quote unquote people look like you and bringing in, you know, your income and your values?
You know, I don't think there's anything inherently wrong about that. I think that there's a way that the conversation around gentrification has been framed in the United States since the word sort of entered our lexicon. I think that it came in, you know, through a sociologist by the name of Ruth Glass, and she used language like invade and displace. And so when you think about words like an invade and displace, you're automatically going to think about someone doing a wrong to someone else. And I think, you know, fundamentally, none of us wants to think that we are the ones doing the wrong to someone else. And I do want to point out something really quickly, is that the story really sparked for me. The spark of the story came at a wedding back in October where I spoke to a gentleman who, the first thing he said to me was that I make more than $1 million a year. And then he said, but. And he went on to explain how he's oppressed. And it started to make me think how everyone can come up with a reason why and a way to explain their oppression. At what point do we start to acknowledge our role within all of this and then start to move from that place?
Roy on Roosevelt Island. You're on WNYC with Dax Devlin Ross. Hi.
Yes, hi. Thank you. I was calling to, first of all, generally reject the term gentrifier, since I think that is a term that has hidden racial overtones about it and that really should not be a necessary part of our mindset. My first wife lived in Hamilton House. Her father was a doctor and built a building right on the corner of 141st and St. Nicholas Avenue. Was very wealthy, but he was black, and he didn't consider himself out of the neighborhood. He was part of the neighborhood, mm-hmm. and there were people in the neighborhood who earned a lot less money, but there was no lack of cohesion in the sense of neighborhood.
And, Roy, I'm going to have to leave it there for time, but do you take any of his point?
I mean, I think that, you know, I'm working within a tradition of in a language that's been sort of handed down to me, and I think you're absolutely right. I would love for us to not have to even use that term, but I think there is a need to. I think, again, I go back to the point where there is a need to acknowledge what is taking place. What does it mean when, over a period of 10 years, you see a dramatic shift where people are no longer able to live in a neighborhood that they maybe grew up in? Do we find that problematic? If not, at least we need to have a conversation about it. And I think that gentrification, it being such a hot-button word, it challenges us to talk about it, to say, what does it mean that I can't live here and that you can live here now? And I want to live in a community just like this, but why can't I? So I think that's what I think the value of the word is, that it triggers people and requires us to at least talk about it.
Joe in Harlem, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi, can you hear me okay?
Sure can, Joe.
Okay, cool. I'm Latino, and I currently moved to Harlem, but I'm originally from, my dad is from Harlem, my grandparents are from Harlem, I grew up in the Lower East Side, and, you know, I moved back. I bought a brownstone, and I came back as a different individual because I distanced myself from the old neighborhood and basically reinvented myself. But coming back, I see that there's a big shift in Harlem toward gentrification. And
so how do you feel about it? Are you ambivalent about whether it's a good thing or a bad thing in the ways that our guest is raising?
It's a mixed bag with me, honestly. I'll tell you the truth. I love it because it's bringing vitality back to the neighborhood. But I resent it because the character has changed so much from what it used to be.
Thank you very much. And Cuthbert in Washington Heights, you're on WNYC. Hi there.
Good morning.
So what'd you call to say?
I just called to say that I feel like minorities, especially the young minorities, they have a bit of a harder time causing gentrification. Even though they make up the same demographic, they are oftentimes, the changes that occur do not occur organically with them when they move into neighborhoods, whereas when young whites move into neighborhoods, those changes kind of occur because the neighborhood wants to, or the owners in the neighborhood want to facilitate attracting more of them, whereas it does, it's not the same for young minorities.
It does, so, you don't think it works in pure economic terms as well? If the landlord can suddenly get 5 times the rent that he was getting before, whether the new wealthier neighbors are black or white or other, that he will start charging that greater rent and therefore people will be forced out? Cuthbert, I'm asking you.
No, I know, I heard, and I agree with you, and I think he would, but I think that change occurs much slower when it's young minorities moving in, instead of young whites.
Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Dax, what do you think?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. Like, I find that I do, because of my own experience and because my experience is one in which there's been a lot of cross-class experience, a lot of things that have happened cross-class. I find myself moving in and moving through that space. I'm cool with everybody. That's how I am, you know. And I think it's easy to feel like you're passing as a result of that because you're cool with everybody. But I do think that I don't like to use the terms the us and the them. And I feel like that's a problematic way of thinking about it, because that's to assume that the young white person is moving in there does not come themselves from an experience that is quote unquote organic, meaning that they've grown up in diverse communities, that they have an experience that actually contributes to and is respectful of whatever they're coming into.
Though you write in the article that black people were merely the temporary placeholders of urban spaces, mm-hmm. based on changes you'd witnessed. What
Absolutely.
Do you mean by that?
I think that, you know, that was me writing from the perspective, I think, of the younger me that grew up in Washington, D.C., and having a really personal relationship to it when I watched my father, who had a business in the U Street corridor. And I remember, like, days when he would come in and his building would be robbed, and it didn't seem to be any kind of, you know, the police didn't seem to care very much, or this didn't seem to be much of an effort to change. And only when, in the mid to late 90s, there began to be a sort of push to gentrify that area in D.C., did you start to see more policing, and you start to see, as a result, more white people. So that I think that my experience, as I wrote about there, was about a sort of a personal hurt that I felt.
Listeners, you can keep this conversation going on our website. As our show is coming to an end, go to WNYC.org and click on Brian Lehrer Show, and you'll see what people have already posted on this tension that some people feel about being a gentrifier versus being someone who's improving a neighborhood. Dax Devlin Ross wrote about his struggle with that in a new web magazine called Dominion of New York. You want to take just a couple of seconds and tell people what Dominion of New York is?
First, I just want to say Dominion of New York is a fascinating and amazing new literary and intellectual outlet. It is started in New York, and it had a New York focus, but it is an international in the sense that there are correspondents in London, correspondents in Paris, correspondents all over the country and all
over
the
world. Is it online at dominionofnewyork.something?
Yes, it is. dominionofnewyork.com.
Dax Revlin Ross. Good conversation. Thank you very much.
Awesome. Thank you.
Brian Lehrer, WNYC.